1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 6. Perfect number.
Isn't 3 the perfect number?
Yeah, I got 6 more bullets in my gun.
Well, well, well. If it isn't the podcast listener. This is Arnie, Coast and Out Playing, doing my best Clint Eastwood impersonation to tell you about the Man With No Name trilogy of reviews that we have done here at Now Playing. You see, in this world, there's 2 kinds of people, my friend. Those who donate to Now Playing and those who don't. And if you don't, you're going to miss out on reviews of what are considered some of the best Western films in all of history.
There, that's out of my throat. Stuart, Jacob, and I have spent the past 3 weeks reviewing the 3 films loosely connected, all by Sergio Leone, all starring Clint Eastwood, known as the Man With No Name trilogy. We started with A Fistful of Dollars, then did For a Few Dollars More, and finally ended with the classic epic The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. It's the kickoff to our spring 2019 donation drive that I'm going to tell you a little bit more about. But if you're interested in hearing these reviews, all 3 are available right now if you donate. You can go to nowplayingpodcast.com/donate, and it's at the $10 silver level. You're going to get these 3 reviews immediately, and then later this summer, we're also going to be reviewing Sergio Leone's Once Upon a Time in the West and Once Upon a Time in America as a bit of a lead-in to Quentin Tarantino's upcoming Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It's people who support this show that make it possible for us to continue. This month, April, we're doing 4 brand new release movies. We're doing Shazam, Pet Sematary, Hellboy, and then the ultimate Avengers Endgame. That's 4 new release films in a row, and the way we're able to get these edited, the way we're able to prioritize all of this, the way we're able to put other aspects of our life on hold is thanks to donors who keep the show going and cover the costs of doing this show, like servers and bandwidth that every couple months get more expensive for us. Without donors and patrons, we simply would not be able to continue this podcast. And we are grateful to every patron we have currently, as well as everyone who's donated so far in the spring series. So you can hear all these shows right now. But if you're on the fence, here's a few short clips from these reviews, and then I'll be back after to tell you about all the other movies we're reviewing this summer for patrons and donors. Today we're discussing Yojimbo, starring...
No, we're doing the unlicensed remake, Fistful of Dollars.
Oh, that's right. Same movie, different title, different star. Today we're discussing A Fistful of Dollars, starring Clint Eastwood.
What I will say, just jumping to the end, is we cannot conclude how profitable it has been. There is so much about this movie, the appeal is of what we don't know. It allows for different readings. Some people that are religious could look at this and say that this is a man delivered by God to vindicate and save the last good townspeople that are living here. Or you could just be very cynical and say, yeah, this is someone that has profited by being the least worst of all the terrible people in this environment. Whatever way you want to go, there is something noble. If it's not clear that he's the good, the bad, or the ugly, he is at least better than everyone else on screen by letting this woman reunite with her husband and kid, sending her on her way with a little bit of money, and then getting back to get the shit beat out of him, and never giving up where she went to.
I don't know exactly that he knows. He's just like, get across the border, but I mean, at a certain point, he wouldn't know where they were anyway. But yeah, they crush his hand and they put out cigarettes on his hand.
They don't crush his firing hand, though. That was stupid of him.
Well, yeah, there's some really stupid things that happened towards the end of this film that they could have done to him. But yeah, that's one of them.
Again, I guess you guys say that Ramon was obsessed with the woman. But I'm like, the woman's gone. Just kill Joe, you know, just kill him slowly. The fact that they're so insistent not to kill him because they want the information of where she went, it's what allows him to escape.
Yeah, but this is a common trope in Westerns of the previous decades, is you always have the scene where the tough guy gets the crap beat out of him so that it shows his resolve, it shows his ability to withstand such pain. It's not really about explaining the motivations of the villains. This is not a psychologically deep film. It's not Black Hat, White Hat. Everyone's kind of gray here, but it isn't multidimensional. I do think that this is here mostly to give us the impression that Eastwood, like Jesus, is going to go underground for a little bit and then come back and be able to withstand bullets. Like, he'll come back and figure out a way to withstand Winchester blasts.
Well, yeah, I want to know how you cut that chunk out of that mine cart, because, yeah, he's, I guess, in an abandoned mine shaft, and there's a cart there, and he discovers bullets won't go through that metal, so he somehow, like, grinds a piece off to where is a chest plate.
I feel like I am so spoiled. You already mentioned Back to the Future 3, Jacob, and I feel like that movie spoiled the ending of this one for me, because the moment I saw the suit of armor...
Did they not show this in Back to the Future 2? I think it's in 2 when he's at Biff's casino.
Okay, yeah, but they show this specific scene of him having the suit of armor, or the steel plate.
It was actually this scene from this movie they show. Okay.
Uh-huh. And Marty does the same thing. And so when I see the rifle and I see him working on the car, I'm like, well, under that poncho, he's going to have thicker metal than a suit of armor. I thought maybe it was a John Wayne film, and the suit of armor we saw was telling us there was nothing he could do to have a bulletproof vest. No, it was just saying he needs a thicker bulletproof vest.
I don't even remember Back to the Future 2 or 3 that well, but I feel like this is another one of Leone's visual jokes, because it's true. If you look at Shane, which resembles in many ways this film, he's a knight in shining armor that rides in and saves a woman and a child and is such a hero. And I think that Leone was trying to make something different. They take that icon and it's target practice in a movie like this. They want to take pot shots at the idea that cowboys are knights of the round table. He doesn't want you to think of Joe, man with no name, Eastwood, in that way. Do we judge him by not coming to the aid of the Baxters? Because the way he's able to get to that mine shaft is that the coffin maker sneaks him out, and the Rojos are too busy just finally doing what they've always wanted to do, blowing up the front of the sheriff's office, and then indiscriminately shooting whoever comes out waving a white hanky saying, "We surrender." Just like dogs.
Yeah, I feel like they try to play it. Maybe the Rojos are bad because of Consuelo, the wife of the sheriff. She comes out, oh, they're even going to shoot a woman. But he set the Baxters up as crooked lawmen, as just another gang. I'm not crying tears over them dying.
Today, we're talking For a Few Dollars More, starring Clint Eastwood.
We can tell from this opening shot, it seems to be disconnected from the rest of the narrative. We just see a cowboy in a very, very wide shot get taken out, fall over, and his horse run away. It tells us that this is more a series of cool set pieces than a really tightly developed storyline.
And as much as I love the animated sequence last week, this one just feels, I guess, more dire than A Fistful of Dollars. And yeah, you have some unknown person. We're never going to know who it is that was shot and killed.
I have a theory. I'm going to throw it out there. I think it's Eastwood. And I'll explain why next film.
All right.
It may be Eastwood doing the shooting because we hear a match strike like he's want to do right before the shot is fired. But the killer is whistling, and I never hear Eastwood doing that.
At first, I thought this opening shot was just, you know, a wide shot of desert, but the way that through sound, all ADR, as you mentioned, you find out you're actually in a POV shot of a sniper. Well, who's the sniper in this movie? Mortimer, Van Cleef's character. He's the one who's the sharpshooter at a distance.
Yeah, we'll see him. He's the first main character that we're introduced to, but I don't think it matters. We cut to just a quote there. It's like, when life has no value, death sometimes has its price. And yeah, this is just kind of a bleak opening to me. Just, it could be a total stranger. This is about death, not life. And I think about cowboys, they're riding in, they're saving people, fighting off the engines, whatever. No, this is about bounty killers.
Yeah, I think in the end, the way that it works and the reason why it's included is it sets a tone. And we can argue whether it's Van Cleef doing the shooting, Eastwood doing the shooting, or Eastwood getting shot. Again, that's my favorite theory. All that it really does is set up another cool Morricone score. Only 17 minutes of music, and again, something he had lying around. He didn't see the movie and write to this. It was just kind of pre-made. He was an experimental musician.
All of the music, the clock chimes and the organs and all that?
Yeah, a lot of that was reprocessed. I mean, to say that it was lying around is not to say it was completed. He had written some of the melodies. And so obviously you orchestrate them in a way where, you know, certain instruments will indicate certain characters. So, I mean, he, of course, shaped the material so that it fits this movie. But it wasn't like when he first put pen to paper, he was thinking about for a few dollars more.
I really do like the music in this. The credits are kind of crazy, though, the way they zip in left to right and get shot down and they're all diagonal and crazy. It seems like the kind of credits I would expect to see, like Bugs Bunny and Marvin the Martian running around behind, not this dead corpse lying on the ground and the horse running away.
That's Saul Bass. He didn't do these credits, but he is probably the most influential title creator. If you remember the credits to Psycho or many Hitchcock films of the era, he sort of set the tone and everyone tried to ape him. And that's what it reminds me of. But he never had a score like this, where it's jaw harp and whistling and the choirs are back.
And there's gunshots in the music and horse whinnies in the music. Last week's movie, I wasn't quite sure what was effects and what was music, but the effects are the music. It's a kind of weird thing to do that works in this case.
Yeah, I think that's going to be their signature later when we get to Once Upon a Time in the West and harmonica. It almost becomes a character. But we're not going to start with Eastwood. We already kind of know who he is. So let's start with the stranger riding into town that we have no idea about, Colonel Douglas Mortimer.
Oh, I love this intro. We talked about all of the religious imagery, and we're definitely going to get that carrying over here. But yeah, he's holding that Bible on the train, and he's being addressed as father. And nope, he pulls that down. He does not look like a priest.
Yeah, Leone, I think it's very clear now. I mean, before I was like, you know, there's a lot of religious iconography. Is it sincere? But yeah, if you have a killer coming in, hiding his face by a Bible, this is one of many indications that Leone is playing with that. Again, in classic John Ford westerns, you would see allusions to religion and they would be played straight face. Keep in mind, Leone thought he was making a fantasy and a parody of those films. So you're meant to laugh.
Oh, and I am laughing. I love Mortimer's intro. I mean, trying to think of someone who has to compete with Clint Eastwood. I mean, the fact that he's like, I'm getting off at this town. And they're like, there's not a stop there. Oh, yes, there is. And he just stops that train and gets off. I love his intro.
And the fact that the train stops at the exact right place for his horse to go down the ramp. I mean, that is a special talent to know, I'm going to pull the brake here because the car is there, the ramp is there. That is parody-like. It's like the type of thing I'd see in The Last Action Hero when Arnold Schwarzenegger has things going on that are completely outside the realm of reality for the sake of humor. That's what this is. But yeah, I like when the train guy's running up to him. You just can't pull the brake. He like pulls back the coat. You see the gun belt. He's like, the train company will be very happy to stop for you. Let's get out of here.
Yeah, he is a man in black, and Von Cleef has the scariest stare of any actor I could ever think of. And so you may not assume that he's quote-unquote a good guy, but we are going to have a good, bad, and ugly triangle that actually gets created here. This isn't that movie, but I think the groundwork for laying that movie is here, and this is the character I think we get closest to calling a good character. Once we finally find his motives and what he's about, maybe he's not a Bible reading reverend, but I do think that if you can accept revenge as an acceptable response to violence, then he is killing for the right reason.
Today we're discussing the good, the bad, and the ugly. This opening scene, you mentioned Tarantino last week in the show. The scene that came to mind for me was Inglourious Basterds, when Christoph Waltz goes to the home of the Germans who are keeping the Jews underground, and just the way they eat together and they seem cordial, the fact that we get Van Cleef here eating with the victim and having this conversation. And I wonder, honestly, is Van Cleef lying when he says, I'm only here for information, I'm not here to kill you, or can Van Cleef be bought off? I don't know which way it's going to go, but this is a really tense scene, and yeah, an even better entrance than last time.
Yeah, I thought that he was going to double dog dare him to say what again. I mean, it definitely, it has that rhythm of Pulp Fiction. You can see it in the style of Tarantino. It's just that he allows it to be quiet, which I think is an improvement. I'm going to go ahead and say I like sound design telling the story more than Tarantino kind of doing his own personal commentary track inside the movie.
Nobody loves Tarantino's words more than Tarantino.
Indeed.
Yeah, we're going to find out, which was a surprise to me coming out of the last film, that yes, Angel Eyes is going to be our bad.
Mm-hmm.
And that means Clint Eastwood, Man With No Name, is good? I don't know that I ever would have described him as good, and I don't know that I'll describe him as good in this film.
Yeah, well, I think the titles are ironic. I mean, I definitely feel like this ugly character is actually the most attractive, at least in terms of who you want to watch on screen. And yeah, this good guy, he does some pretty awful things.
I don't know. They make Tuco pretty damn ugly with that mustache and hair.
I don't know. Just wait till Eastwood gets dragged through the desert. I remember turning to my wife. I'm like, oh, who's the ugly now?
But he is Blondie now. That is, again, a nickname given to him by Tuco. It's not really his name. But he shows up late, about 18 minutes into the film. He's going to be the one that saves Tuco from people that are trying to collect on his $2,000 ransom poster. And they're going to strike out and form this partnership.
And I know we're in trouble. If your favorite character was whatever name Eastwood was going by, this is his intro. We've seen the ugly. We've seen the bad. Here's the goods intro. He's getting upstaged by Tuco. I am cracking up when he's dragging Tuco in on that horseback all tied up and he's calling him a son of a bitch. Maybe it's because Eastwood never says much in these films. It's the other characters. Tuco steals the scene from him here, and this is his intro.
It's worth pointing out this script was only 2 hours in length. The extra hour is the fact that they fell in love with Eli Wallach. And he has way more than the other two guys, more lines, more scenes. It grew around him. He became the focus the more and more Leone saw what he was doing. They could talk. For one thing, Eli Wallach knew French and Leone knew French. So they could actually converse about what was going on with the characters. And I think that they were just able to get to somewhere here with the ugly that they didn't move past on the other two characters.
I don't feel like Eastwood gets upstaged here. I love his coat that he looks like he has his hand in his pocket, but it's just a cut in the coat so he can always have his hand on his gun underneath so he can quick draw and shoot those three guys. But I'm coming out of the mindset of the last movie. He played a bounty hunter last movie. This is telling me he's playing a bounty hunter again. And like last movie, he killed these other men because he wanted the bounty. That's what I'm taking this scene to be, is he's taking this guy in for the $2,000 bounty. It's a surprise to me, the twist that those two are working together. It explains why he took Tuco in alive. I thought that his MO is always shoot them and bring in the bodies, but I'm thinking Tuco is just a one-scene player at the beginning. I think, oh, they're hanging him? Am I confused? I mean, when you see him jumping out the window with the food and things, his face is distended, and when they freeze frame him, I'm like, is that the same guy? I think it's the same guy. Maybe it wasn't the same guy. Where's the ugly if it's not this guy?
I know Eli Wallach very well, and he's always giving this performance. I think that this movie is his most successful, most noted role, and for 30, 40 more years, he continued to give this part because it just works for him. So I knew who he was, and yeah, I just love them running down the list of everything that he's done, from passing counterfeit money to perjury, bigamy, you name it. He's there on a horse in a noose, and this is to show how dangerous it was on these Italian sets. Wallach was like, why aren't you putting cotton in the horse's ears? The horse was not supposed to run away, and the rope was supposed to break, and that was all that was supposed to happen. That is really Eli Wallach with the horse running at high speeds for a mile outside of the set. He could have fallen, he could have died, and that happened many times on this production. It's a great shot. Looks, I'm glad it's in the movie. It feels like it would have been right to script, but that was not how it was supposed to go. And that
I love the thought, keep filming.
Yes, exactly. No concern. Again, they had all of this money. It didn't go for safety and prop checking and all. It was a very, very dangerous set. Eli Wallach drank poison, thinking it was lemonade on this set. And, you know, the scene later when he's freed by the train that runs over his manacles, like it almost took his head off.
Oh, that scene, we'll talk about it. But I got problems with in movie, out of movie, the safety is bad.
Yeah. It makes it fun now. However traumatic it might have been for Eli Wallach to be on this set, I'm really enjoying him in this movie, and these scenes are magical. I'm hooked, and it hurts. It hurts when we find out that Blondie isn't going to be Christoph Waltz to his Django. Like, I thought, thinking in Tarantino language, oh, they got a good con going. Why don't they keep this going? And Eastwood thinks he's only worth $3,000. They'll never ask more for you. He's going to essentially cut this guy loose. And that's pretty ugly. He leaves him to die. And I think that might be the worst thing that we've seen this man with no name do to anybody.
And he's listed as the good.
Yeah, I don't understand how that's a good thing, but...
It's irony. I mean, that if the movie's telling you there is no good here, that's exactly what it's saying. If this is your good, look at the world. This is a bad, bad place.
So you can hear all three of those reviews right now. Head to nowplayingpodcast.com/donate, make a PayPal donation there, or go to nowplayingpatron.com, become a monthly patron of our show of $10 or more. You get not only the silver level shows during this donation drive, but almost 25 other exclusive reviews that are only available to patrons, including Apocalypse Now, New Jack City, The Untouchables, Enter the Dragon, Beetlejuice, The Last Dragon, The Wizard, Clive Barker's Lords of Illusions, The Lego Batman Movie, Get Out, Atomic Blonde, Galaxy Quest. A lot of reviews sitting there, full movie reviews like we do on every movie we cover, exclusive for patrons. Plus, as the summer goes on, there's going to be even more reviews for patrons and donors. Like I said, we're doing the 5 Sergio Leone films as our silver level series. For our gold level series, though, we're taking a look back on one of the most influential summers of cinema ever, 1989. I know Stuart has cited this as a very formative year for him and his love of movies. I remember being at theater every week, watching something new, and we've already covered a lot of 1989 movies, like Batman and Star Trek V and The Fly Lives, Pet Sematary, Fright Night Part 2, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. These were all 1989 films. Karate Kid 3, Friday the 13th Part 8, Nightmare on Elm Street 5. Big year for franchise films, but some of the biggest movies of that year didn't really spawn franchises. Or, in the case of one, it spawned a franchise, but one that the sequels aren't nearly as worthy of covering. So if you go gold level with $25 or more, you're going to get 12 total podcasts. The Man With No Name series, plus Dead Poets Society, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Do the Right Thing, When Harry Met Sally, Parenthood, Sex, Lies, and Videotape, and ending with James Cameron's The Abyss. You've got action, comedy, drama, dramedy, indie films. All of those reviews are coming out starting April 19th all the way through September 6th. And if you go platinum for $35 or more, you can hear us go very in-depth on a 1989 franchise, Lethal Weapon. One of the big franchise movies that summer was Lethal Weapon 2. Lethal Weapon 1 had been a bit of a sleeper hit that just exploded with the second movie. We're going to be covering all 4 Lethal Weapon films for our platinum donors. And then if you missed out on some of our previous donation drives, we're bringing those back because there are new installments coming. The Men in Black series, we're reviewing Men in Black International this summer. The Tarantino series, as I mentioned, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is coming out. And the Child's Play series, as the Child's Play reboot with Mark Hamill as the voice of Chucky, is coming out later this summer as well. And as a reminder, if you previously donated through PayPal to us for Men in Black, Tarantino, and or Child's Play, you'll be getting those extra installments without any additional donation needed. We always, when we follow up on a series, if you donated directly to us, you're grandfathered in. If they come out with Lethal Weapon 5, people who donate for Lethal Weapon now would get that episode with no additional donation. And I just can't stress this enough, how much we appreciate every single donation we get, every single donor. In this day and age, we know every dollar counts, and we don't ask lightly for you to donate to support Now Playing. But we're so grateful for everyone who does, and we are happy to give you guys these extra podcasts as a thank you for supporting our show. I mean, it's hard for me to believe, but we're entering our 9th year of weekly free podcasts on the main feed without a single break. The last time we did not have a free show for everyone to listen to on the main feed was when we took a break in December of 2010 between Tron Legacy and the review we did of Blade Runner. Since then, we've had a minimum of one free show on the main feed every single week. That's 430 weeks of brand new podcasts that we put our heart and soul into. And it's because of donors that we've been able to maintain this unbroken streak of podcasts and kept our site running and been able to continue the upgrades that we've done 9 years running. If you're not able to support the show right now, we completely understand, and we will still have a bunch of reviews coming, one every Tuesday to every listener of Now Playing, whether you're able to donate or not. This summer on the main feed, as I mentioned, in addition to this month's Shazam, Pet Sematary, Hellboy, and Avengers, we've got Detective Pikachu, John Wick 3, X-Men Dark Phoenix, Annabelle Comes Home, The Curse of La Llorona, Spider-Man Far From Home, Hobbs and Shaw, New Mutants, if it actually comes out, It Chapter 1 and 2, plus the It miniseries, other Stephen King stuff, Joker, Rambo 5, but if you are able to donate, you're going to get up to 43 total bonus podcasts, including 19 new reviews we're recording this spring and summer. And thank you for listening. We'll be back on Tuesday with our review of Shazam, and we'll talk to you soon.
I'm letting you live, Hero. That's so you can tell everybody you've seen what takes place here.
Your support helps keep Now Playing on the air.
The man's got money in his pocket. He begins to appreciate the people.
The opinions expressed on Now Playing are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the opinion of Venganza Media Incorporated.
See, I understand you men were just playing around, but the Muley just doesn't get it. If you apologize, like I know you're going to, I might convince him that you really didn't mean it.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with, and this podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created the film analyzed herein.
It's no joke, it's a rope, Tuco. I want you to stand up there and put your head in that noose.
All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of the respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review, and no infringement is intended.
There are two kinds of people in the world, my friend. Those with a rope around their neck and the people who have the job of doing the cutting.
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of and may not be used without the expressed written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
You'll all turn to dust. But one thing is sure, boys. Breath and bridge will stand unbroken.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2019. All rights reserved. And no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Every gun makes its own tune.